much for joining me today. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelly Kino. And Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar, for those who don't know, a quick science lesson, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells. And just when it thinks life is over, it becomes a butterfly. But that's not enough. It has to struggle in the cocoon in order for its wings to be able to take it everywhere it's going to go when it gets out. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through limits that society places upon us. And today I'm really thrilled with my guest, and I'm excited for what I'm going to learn and what you are going to learn. But before we get to Patrick, I do want to remind you to like and subscribe and share and make sure that you never miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits again. We are coming up to our 200th episode, which is mind-boggling to me. And I'm going to have prizes at that episode. And just, it's going to be a great, great time. So you don't want to miss that. So be sure and subscribe and like. And while you're watching, today's episode is actually recorded, which is unusual. But go ahead and leave us a hashtag and where you're watching from. And if you have any questions or comments, be sure to leave them in the chat and I will answer them, or I will make sure to get them to Patrick so he can answer them. So without further ado, welcome, Patrick. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you, Shelley?
I am doing awesome. I am so thrilled for what we are going to do, because what you are going to teach us is one area that I kind of, if I had any regrets in my life, this would be the one that I never learned how to play the piano. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really thrilled that you are going to teach us about that. And I kind of gave away the secret now. but go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and kind of, you know, your life's journey to this point.
Yeah, my name is Patrick Boylan. I'm a co-founder of a music education app called MuseFlow. We're teaching in a very different way. We're teaching through sight reading, the act of reading music at first sight. That's kind of our engine for the actual curriculum itself. Instead of giving you songs to go home and practice and to you repeat that to boredom and then bring that back to your teacher and they check it off as perfect or not, and then you have to go home and practice that again. No. We're giving you the new skill inside of the context of music you've never seen before that never repeats. It just keeps on flowing until you get 95% accuracy at the goal tempo of that level specifically, and then you move on to the next skill. We do skill building in a very specific way. We add a new note, add a new rhythm, new time signature, new skill, whatever it may be, incrementally as the curriculum progresses. And so you learn it outside of the context of new songs, and then you apply it to songs that get unlocked, those new skills that you learn in sight reading. So we're just putting sight reading first, adding a whole new step that's very engaging, and letting you learn outside of songs, outside of the rote memorization of those songs. And so, yeah, I love it. It's kind of based on the way that I taught myself how to play piano. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we can go into the backstory about it all you want, Shelley, but that's kind of the general gist of MuseFlow and why I'm so passionate about it, because it is so personal.
Yeah. Thank you so much for explaining that. And I remember I did learn how to play the clarinet when I was in grade school. And I absolutely remember what you talked about. I'd go, you know, we'd get some music at school and then I'd go home and I would practice it and then I would practice it some more and then I would practice it some more. And my parents were like, oh my gosh, these sounds are horrible.
Right. Totally.
I mean, until classic. I could get it. Yeah. Until
it I could like get a dying it goose, out. Right? When you play that.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Totally. I was a clarinetist too. And so that was my instrument in band as well. I remember thoroughly.
Yes. Yes. And these were the days I didn't call them recorders. We called them flutophones. That's how old I am. They were not called recorders. They were called flutophones.
Never heard that before.
Yes. And so we had those, I think, in third or fourth grade. And then this was like fifth or sixth grade when, you know, because like the flutophone was kind of the, hey, let's get you the idea of what band will be like or learning an instrument will be like.
Right.
And then, you know, if you're really interested in it, then you can fork out the money. But yeah, they call them recorders now. Same thing. I don't think there's any difference to them at all. They just have a different name. And yeah, I mean, I did beautifully with the recorder, and I did, because I put in the practice time. I did fabulous with the clarinet. I never made a mistake when I was playing for my teacher until the very end of the year. I made one mistake. He screamed at me literally for 5 minutes. And I said, I'm done. I'm out. So yeah,
it's wild.
I went into singing after that, and I, you know, the rest of my junior high, I was in our chorus, and then in high school, I was in our chorus, and yeah, never picked up an instrument again.
What a shame. That's terrible. What a, why, what was the thing? 'Cause like, I got yelled at by teachers, but not for one mistake.
Yeah. I thought, you know, I've killed myself practically, you know, all this year to always be able to present everything to him perfectly, because that was my personality. I was a perfectionist, so I did not want to do it wrong. And the one day, I literally missed one note, and I thought I can't handle this stress anyway, because you know, having to practice and be perfect all the time, and then to have him scream at me like that for one tiny little mistake. Now I understand years later that, you know, his behavior was his communicating something. It wasn't about me.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that at 10 years old.
Of course. And,
you know, so I was just like, okay, you know, if I'm not perfect, then he doesn't want me here, and he's gonna, you know, and that wasn't how my parents raised me. They didn't scream at me to get me to do what I should do. You know, it was done with love and compassion. And so that was so incredibly foreign to me. I was a great student. So teachers never yelled at me. And I was just like, okay, I'm out.
Do you think that reinforced your perfectionism?
Probably.
Sure. I get, 'cause like, I'm putting myself in that position, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, if I was somebody who cared deeply about being perfect, I was a straight A student, I'm imagining. You were a really good student. Yeah.
Yes.
My wife is the same way. She's incredibly good at academics, and we've kind of delved into why she is. A lot of it had to do with like external factors. Like, she's really good with strictures being placed on her, and then her working within those boxes to being perfect within those boxes, so that when life actually happened and there were no rules and she had to figure it out on her own, she floundered, you know?
Yes.
So freelance lifestyle is very difficult for her, but she's going, she's doing it, and she's an incredible writer. And so she wants it, and she's, anyway, back to you. I could only imagine if you never had that sort of type of teaching style, that sort of anger, that aggression from a teacher. And you were always trying to be perfect. I could only imagine how much that specific interaction reinforced your interest in perfectionism, your interest in being perfect. And as we know, perfectionism kills creativity. It's all about the progress. Right. It's all about the incremental steps to being this absolute impossibility of perfect, always trying to reach what you believe is perfect, but always being okay with the progress, not the perfection. I could only imagine how much that like messed with your mindset.
Yeah. And I had anxiety before they knew that it was anxiety. I mean, that word, you know, didn't come around until 20 years ago. And this was, like I said, a whole lot more years ago than that. And what it did was just solidify that if I wasn't perfect, people wouldn't like me.
That's what I'm talking about.
And that was the external factor that drove me to be perfect, was I got to get straight A's. I got to be everybody's. Yeah, it was a whole thing. Oh, but anyway, we're not here to talk about any of that stuff.
I mean, it ties really well into music education and how that used to be the metric for success, playing one specific song perfectly. But now with this new way of teaching, MuseFlow is ready to change that paradigm and make it be about those incremental steps. We're not expecting 100%. We're not. Mm-hmm. We're expecting 95%. That means you can get a couple notes wrong, and that's okay. Right. You know, that's not what creativity is all about. And being perfect is a very specific skill set in music performance. But there are so many other skill sets that are necessary to be a performer, a music performer. I'm a professional pianist here in Los Angeles. I've got three residencies across Los Angeles, and I play background jazz, and then I play at a piano bar. Like, those are what I do, right? Mm-hmm. And being perfect is never even a part of that equation. So, wow. You know, we decided that we wanted to switch that paradigm from perfectionism to progress, right? Caring about the musicianship and caring about learning the technique of playing your instrument in a fun and engaging way, instead of caring deeply about repeating these one specific song over and over and over to perfectionism, you know? It's a whole different way to think about
it. And now that I'm an adult and I understand behaviors and I understand that behavior is communication and, you know, I understand that I'm not perfect. I never will be perfect. I strive, as you said, to be perfect, but Jesus Christ is the only perfect person that I was ever aware of that walked this earth. And I embrace my mistakes now.
Love it. Yes.
I try to help others. Like, this is one of the ways that we learn, you know? But unfortunately, I didn't know that as a kid.
Of course.
And it took me until I was in my 20s before that really started to sink in. And I really started, I'd heard people say, nobody's perfect. You can't be perfect. Well, my personality was, I'm going to be that one. I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to be that perfect one. when it happened, when I faced any kind of pushback that I wasn't perfect, oh my gosh, Patrick, the first time I got a C on my report card.
You got a C, Shelley?
I don't like art either. The creative stuff. I wanted to know what are the parameters.
Right.
And what do I have to do to check the boxes and get it done the way you want it to? And they couldn't tell me that in art class. Mm-hmm. And you know, music class they could tell me, but I messed it up once. And then it was, I'm done.
Did you get a C in art class?
I got a C in art class.
No, Shelley.
Yep.
Why? What was the reasoning?
I wasn't creative enough. I don't know. I wasn't doing things to their stipulations. I don't remember. Okay. I just, you know, if it could be anything where you could give me vocabulary words to memorize and learn and apply, I could do that. But when it came to the actual crafting of the projects, I didn't have creativity in that way.
Very interesting.
And to this day, I do not feel like an artist of any kind or creative. I have realized that my creativity comes when I am working with families through the special education process, and I am coming up with different ways to help them and reach their child's goals and for the school to reach them. And so my creativity is an academic creativity versus, you know, music or working with different materials to create some sort of art piece.
Well, what's the root word of creative? It is create.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you doing with those students and parents? You are creating. You are cobbling together tactics from all across the board and saying, no, this is where you're creating a series of tactics for them. That is inherently creative. So don't limit yourself. No limits, Shelley.
I know this is one of the things that I have learned through my podcast and through my work is that I am creative.
It's just creative.
Not the way that typical people think of as creativity.
I love it.
You know,
I love it.
So, okay. We're not talking about me. We're talking about you.
I seem to do this with you, Shelley. I seem to do this. I get you talking and then you just, and then we start talking about, and I love it. Like I really do love hearing the in-depth, you know, discussions about who you are and your life. And I really, really love to get, I'm loving getting to know you. So don't mind me if I ask you questions too. Okay.
Well, but this isn't about me. This is your opportunity to share about MuseFlow. And so let's talk about MuseFlow.
Okay.
So how did it come about? Why did you said this, you couldn't learn the traditional way.
I took 8 years of traditional piano lessons and I hated every second of it. My parents had to ground me for not practicing. I wanted to mess around. I wanted to play with the songs that I was given. I didn't want to learn it rote and verbatim. I wanted to enjoy the fluidness of it and be inspired by the song, not play it by rote, right? And so my teacher retired, no fault of my own. He just retired. I was a terrible student, yes, but he just, you know, he retired. And so I get asked that sometimes. I'm like, Pat, did you drive him to or did he just stay? He's retired. And I'm like, no. I knew he told me, and I knew some of his other students. Anyway, 3 months go by and I didn't touch the piano because I was burnt out. This was right around like 15, 16 years old, maybe 14, okay. 14 or 15. And we still had that beautiful piano in the living room. And so I ended up going back to it and finding my parents' sheet music that they had. They had a bunch of musical theater scores and vocal selection books. And so I ended up going back to those and I opened it up and I found little bits, little chunks that I really enjoyed. And I was like, that's really fun to play, whether that's beautiful or just really fun to play. Then I closed the music and I started improvising around those phrases. I put it in the right hand and accompaniment in the left. I put it in the left hand, accompaniment in the right. I changed the key. I changed the time signature. I slowed it down. I sped it up. I really fleshed it out, right? And I was like, that's really, really fun. And so I did that again and again and again and again and again. Cut to college. I was the only acting major that could play piano. And so all these musical theater nerds were wanting to rehearse their songs and wanting to practice. And so I was their go-to guy. And so we got a little rehearsal studio and I brought them all in and they started throwing music in front of me and I could play it. I'd never seen those songs before, but I could play that song. And I realized then that what I was doing was taking the chunks, the building blocks of what made musical theater, these little phrases that repeat over and over and over in multiple songs all across the board, not just musical theater, but jazz. I was taking these fundamental parts that made up music and repeating them outside of the context of songs so that when I saw a song that used that phrase or that motif or that chunk, I could then replicate it. I was able to string them together effortlessly to create and play that song and not mess the student up, not mess my cohort up when they're rehearsing and practicing and wanting to sing. That was amazing to me. Cut to like 6 years ago, I was an actor here in LA. I've done some TV. I've done some movies, a little bit of everything, a little bit of commercials. But I was getting, again, super burnt out on it because the space between each gig was too wide. And so my self-confidence was just going up and down and I was not being creatively fulfilled either. And so my wife was like, why don't you go play piano? You know, you've been doing it your entire life and you're very good at it. Why don't you go do that? And I'm like, okay, well I tried. And so 3 months later, I got my first gig as an accompanist at an after-school program for musical theater students. Cool. 2 months go by, I got a background jazz gig at a steakhouse playing for their dinner service. I got another one at an Italian restaurant playing for their dinner service. And then I got my piano bar gig here in Hollywood. And I've been playing there ever since. And so I was able to quit my day job, which was waiting tables. And I was able to then do kind of a mix of both acting and piano. And so that was my life. And that is my life. It's been my life. And, you know, I've been playing for about 5 or 6 years now. And I really, really love it. And so about 2 years ago, I was like, maybe there's a way. I was bored. You know what they say about creativity, right? Creative thoughts happen when you're bored. And so I always try to kind of keep that. I was trying to keep a chunk of my time. I time box it. I'm like, give me a half an hour to just sit and do nothing. Just think. And this was one of those times. And I was like, what if there's a way to teach people the way that I taught myself? And here I am, a professional pianist. Maybe there's a way. Right. And that was when MuseFlow was born. And so instead of improvisation, which is what I used as the engine of my curriculum, we use sight reading as the engine for our curriculum. I brought it over to my music teacher friend and we totally spitballed all of this idea. He had a very similar idea and we just combined ideas and then we just put it out there into the world and we ended up finding three very amazing software engineers, friends of friends of friends of friends. Serendipity happened where I found one of them at one of my gigs. He was just sitting there playing piano before I started. And I went up to the regulars and I was like, who is this guy? And they're like, I don't know. He just like comes in sometimes and sits down and plays. What are you going to do? Are you going to kick him off? And I'm like, no, I'm going to go talk with him. And so we end up going back and forth, trading songs. He plays a classical piece. I play a jazz piece. And we just go back and forth. Turns out the dude's a software engineer and he's a classically trained pianist. I butter him up. I buy him dinner. I show him our pitch deck. 2 weeks later, he texts me. He's like, I can't stop thinking about MuseFlow. And I'm like, well, let me talk with, I never was going to like pitch him on it because mm-hmm. he's working at, like making great money at another job. Like, why would he ever want to do something like this? He ends up hitting me up and asking like, hey, I'd love to be a part of this. And
awesome.
So we ended up vetting him and he was an amazing guy. Like we've been working with him for the past year and a half. He's a great dude and he's a co-founder of ours now. And so, yeah, all of that being said is like, it's very personal. It's been working. People love it. We have about mm-hmm. 40 students right now that are using this, a couple teachers that are using this with their students. Yeah. It's growing slowly but surely. You know, this a paradigm shift doesn't happen overnight. This is one of those things that has to be like, we have to get the idea out there into the world, really start talking about it with people. People argue with it and flesh it out and, you know, ask why it's better. And like, I've got the answers, you know, so I'm here to kind of help, you know, help change the paradigm. So
one of the things about this show is, you know, it's mostly centered around people with disabilities who are busting through those limits. And when you reached out to me, I asked you, you know, I was like, well, that's, you know, what the show is about. And you were like, oh, right. I forgot to tell you I have ADHD.
Oh yeah. And I just did that right now. I forgot yes, to even mention the fact that like, yeah, okay. Right. So I think the reason why I was really bad at the traditional ways of music education, the traditional methods, I'm like 99% positive sure it's because I have ADHD. And again, I didn't get diagnosed until like 5 years ago. And so I didn't really know that. But it's that rote memorization. It's that in-class feel. The pressure of a teacher sitting right here looking at you that doesn't work for me. Even though I can play to an audience of 200, 300 people a night and feel that pressure of them, that makes me better. For some reason, the teacher looking over my shoulder and judging me didn't. It didn't work for me. I also think rote memorization is not a skill set that people with ADHD really flourish in. So changing that idea from rote memorization and engaging flow state, that's the key, I think, to working with people with different abilities. And, you know, I cognitive, you know, I don't know what you want to call it. I wouldn't want to call it dysfunction. Maybe malfunction or different function. I don't know. Is there a word for that?
Well, there probably is. But there is a lot of discussion now about, you know, what special needs, disability, disabled, you know, what's the right term to use? And there are many people that, you know, think this way. And then there are many people who don't like this way and are like, no, you should do it this way. So as a person without something for which I would be classified in the world of disabilities, I don't feel right giving you a word.
I wouldn't like the word disability because that implies that it's like utterly an inhibition on my performance, which in the traditional sense, in the traditional ways of teaching, in the classroom setting, it is. It mm-hmm. absolutely is. It is not benefiting mm-hmm. me whatsoever. But I think we're realizing that there are benefits to having ADHD.
Absolutely. And
there are benefits to having other, what are quote unquote, typical disabilities.
Right.
Absolutely. Like my benefit of thinking outside the box, I'm able to creatively iterate on a problem much faster than most. Mm-hmm. That is something that has been to my advantage in the software engineering ed tech startup sort of mentality. People come to me with a problem on my team and I'm like, well, have you thought about this? They're like, no, that won't work. And I'm like, okay, have you thought about this? And they're like, oh, no. That's a great idea. Let's try that. And it works, you know?
Yeah.
So it's those kind of, I'm starting to realize them myself. I don't know them. I'm not an expert on this whatsoever, but I do think that I'm in the process of learning about that too. you know? So I'd love to keep talking about that. I find that utterly fascinating that a disability can be an advantage. Let's change that thought process. So yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
I absolutely think when I think about people that I have interacted with who have ADHD, they're multitaskers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even though you weren't diagnosed until several years ago, I think the reason that you did so well as a child, while why it wasn't recognized necessarily, is because of the music, because it was already taking your, I call it a superpower, to focus on multiple things at one time and make it come into something. Where I am finding, the older I get especially, that I really have to focus on one thing and I can only focus on one thing at a time. And so if I had the ability to, I mean, like, I can have a couple different thoughts going on, but as far as like my right hand doing something and my left hand doing something different and knowing what each hand is doing, or if I'm going to involve my feet, like, I don't know. Harry Connick Jr., he's an amazing artist. I was able to see him in concert a few years ago. And he played four different instruments at one time, at four different melodies.
I love it.
Yeah. And so I don't know if he has ADHD or not, but I almost, you know, would diagnose him with it just because of that. But I am not a diagnostician, so I'm certainly not going to. But just being able to go, okay, my right hand is going to do this, and my left hand is going to do this, and my right foot is going to do this, and my left foot is going to do this, and they're all four doing completely different things, was just incredible.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having the experiences that I've had as a special education teacher, and for the last 6 or 7 years as an IEP coach, and working with, you know, even more families and more school districts, I think we have done ourselves a huge disservice by not looking at people who are different than us as having superpowers, but as being somehow less than. And we've missed out. And I think that there is a shift now. It's ever so slight, but I do think there is a shift of recognizing these are strengths. They look different, but they're strengths. And I had such a wonderful opportunity as a special education teacher to see that over and over and over again. And that's kind of where this stems from, because I had people telling my students that they wouldn't ever do whatever. They wouldn't read, they wouldn't write, they wouldn't do math, they wouldn't have a good life, they wouldn't get married, they wouldn't go to college, whatever you want to say. And I saw them over and over and over again doing all those things. And I got to be part of that. That is such a cool thing.
That's so cool.
And I want for other people to have that experience and be part of that, which is where, like I said, this kind of stems from, is like, the more exposure we can have, I feel, because that's how it happened for me, was the better off we're going to be, and the mindset will change a little bit. So here I go again. Now I've taken up like a big chunk of time.
No, this was
about
great.
Me.
This is awesome. This is what it's all about. We are monologuing back and forth and sharing our opinions and exploring these concepts. And so when you were saying how like superpower and abilities when it comes to disabilities, I was looking at we had our first user ask us for a green red he's colorblind, red green colorblind, and he needed a specific color difference between our note coloring, because we changed the note color as our error time recognition, our real-time error recognition. We change the color of the note based on how you play it, right? If you get the note correct, it's green. If you get the note wrong, it's red. If you get the note correct, but you don't hold it the right time, it is yellow. It's a duration error, right? He needed something to change within that so that he was able to recognize his errors on the fly, because he wasn't able to recognize the difference between our green and our yellow.
Okay.
And our red. Like, it was just bad all across the board for him, right? And so what we did was we changed that, but we also changed a full-blown colorblind. We have another toggle for full-blown colorblind. And we made it monochromatic. Okay. It's a gradation of very, very light gray to semi-light gray to completely like a darker, darker gray. Mm-hmm. That's darker, darker gray is wrong. Medium gray is a duration error. And then a light, light gray is correct. So when I tried that out, could barely tell the difference between that monochromatic spectrum. But I bet you anything, if somebody that comes in that has color, that is completely colorblind, they can understand the gradation between that very light gray to darker gray so much better than I can, because they're so much more aware of that gradation than I am. It's the same thing with hard of hearing people and their sense of smell, or their blind people and their sense of hearing. It's that same different ability that is enhanced based on their disability. And I think that is just so, it's a beautiful thing. And we need to think about that a little bit more when creating curriculum and creating the methods of which we teach our students. There's an element of personalization in MuseFlow that is very important to me that I think is key. We need to be able to place the student where the challenge meets their skill set, so that they can enter flow state. And that is the sort of all-encompassing immersion that students get when using MuseFlow. I've talked with a couple users that we have, that one of them has ADHD, and he uses it very specifically to drop into flow state. He is scattered all over the place and he can't focus. He ends up putting MuseFlow on so that he can find flow state and he can drop into the present. And that just clarifies his mind a little bit more. On the other end of this, I have another student, another user that I've talked with that it has completely beaten our curriculum so far. This was like months and months ago. And he still plays. We have one levels 0 through 26. That's our curriculum so far. That's unit 1. He has beaten level 26 5 months ago, but still plays every other day for about 30 minutes. At level 26 for 30 minutes. And I had to ask, why? So I emailed him and I asked him, what are you doing? Why are you playing? You've already beaten the curriculum. And he says, I have a very stressful job. And the way that I unwind after work is by playing MuseFlow. Instead of vegging out in the front of the TV, MuseFlow allows me to forget about my worries, forget about time for a second, and drop into flow state so that I can be in the present. When I end MuseFlow, I'm calm, I'm engaged with the present, and then I can move on to enjoy my family. Otherwise, I would keep work inside of me. I would keep the work inside of me. So I love those two applications of MuseFlow. Number one, ADHD. People with ADHD being able to find flow state and actually learn how to play piano fundamentally. And then two, just using flow state as a way to unwind. But it's also a way of learning. And that is the cool thing for me, that we can reframe learning to be engaging, personal, and flow-inducing. If we can do that for students moving forward, that would change the game for education in general.
Absolutely. There's something, and you keep using this phrase, and I would like you to explain it a little bit further. You keep saying flow state.
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit?
So flow state was coined by he's Czech or he's Slovakian somehow. I don't remember where he's from. Poland, maybe. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. He's a neuropsychologist, positive psychologist. He coined the term flow state when he was researching qualitatively musicians and athletes. He found that there was a state of psychology where you are engrossed in what you're doing so perfectly that you're learning and also performing at the same time. And he says that there are very key things to engaging flow state. There's a few different things. Two of them that we employ right off the bat is allowing the user to find where their challenge meets their skill set. Okay. We're going to automate this process later on as a part of a user diagnostic. But right now, we have soft unlocked absolutely everything a part of MuseFlow. Songs. We have about 103 songs that are a part of our repertoire library. And then we have our sight reading trainer, which is levels 0 through 26. 0 is from the get-go teaching you, here's a piano. This is what the notes look like. Play your middle note right now. It's called middle C. Play that right now. It's always going to be at the center of your keyboard. This is what it looks like. Play it now. Boom. You can play it now. I got my keyboard right here. And so that is where we can start you from, one note, right? The next level is playing that one note with music in both hands and having three rhythms. Okay. The next level is adding another note. The next level is adding another note in the left hand, another note in the right hand, another note in the left hand. Let's change the time signature, going from 4/4, which is 4 beats per measure, 3/4, to being 3 beats per measure, 1/2/3, 1/2/3, right? That's the next level. And then the next level is adding another note. The next level is adding another rhythm, okay? Dotted half note, which is 3 beats long. The next one is adding another. Anyway, we keep incrementally going up until we get you to a place where you're playing 14 notes in level 26. 14 notes. You're moving all around the piano, doing pivots and hops and skips, and you're using different fingering techniques that we teach you in levels 22 through 26. And you're using playing in polyphony, which is multi notes at one, poly, multi, phonic notes. Multi sounds at one time, two notes at one time. You're playing two notes at one time. Not, of course, all together, but it's, you know, two notes at one time, polyphonic. So that is where we can, that's our curriculum so far. Anyway, you can place yourself wherever you want to. That is you finding where your skills match the challenge of our curriculum. That's a very important part because everybody cites the reasons why they stop either learning an instrument or really learning anything is either they're too frustrated with the process because the challenge is too high compared to their skill level, or they're too bored because it's too easy for their skill level. Flow state happens right in the middle of that, okay? Where the challenge meets your skill level. So that's number one. Number one, we get you to a place where the challenge meets your skill level just a little bit outside of it, so you're working just a little bit outside of your skill set. Number one, the Goldilocks zone of challenge is what we call it.
Number two,
real-time error recognition. You need positive reinforcement immediately right after you do something, okay? You need to be told either that is correct or wrong. And if it's correct, we need to give you some sort of gratification for that, okay? Real-time error recognition is another key to flow state. You need to know what you did wrong immediately and then be able to immediately apply or change the thing that you got wrong. That's our error recognition, red, yellow, or green. So you can see the notes that you got wrong as you're playing. We'll do a little demo later and you can see how it works. Those are the two keys to flow state that Mihai kind of referenced when it came to athletes and musicians. They need to be shown what they did wrong immediately and then immediately be able to apply that afterwards and change their problem. And number two, they need that Goldilocks zone of challenge. That's flow state. Now, what do you feel when you get into flow state? How does it work? Video games are a key example of this. You lose track of time. I just got my first video game ever. Ever. I never had it. I never had video games growing up. I got my wife a Nintendo Switch for her birthday. We crowdfunded it. I got 30 people to give me $20 so that I can go out and buy her a Nintendo Switch with Zelda Breath of the Wild. It is an incredible video game. It is beautiful and hard and easy at other times. And I lose track of time so much. It is a time suck. I got this last week and I've been playing every night for like 2 to 3 hours and it is ruining my life. I'm not getting good sleep because of it, but it's like a perfect example of flow state. You lose track of time. Number two, you're actually learning things, right? And you're perfectly challenged and you're perfectly engaged with the process of doing that thing. It's an amazing feel. You're dropped into the present. You're working at that specific issue right then and there. This is not delayed gratification. This is happening right then and there, right?
Yeah.
And what happens is you get these sort of dopamine hits every time you do something right because you're in that flow state. That's what you feel. It's an amazing experience. You've probably felt it before. Can you give an example of when you felt that before?
Actually, as we were talking before, and where my creativity is in IEP meetings.
I love it.
I will, you know, all of a sudden look up at the clock and we've been there discussing stuff for 2 hours. And I was like, we just got here. We just started. And yep. When we're having very good conversations and it's not contentious, time doesn't exist.
I think that's so cool. Time doesn't exist. You lose track of time. That's an incredible thing because we are so time bound as a species that, I mean, we are part of the, you know, space time continuum.
Right.
We're literally a part of it. And so to lose track of time is such an incredible gift. And so that's the beauty of flow state. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for describing that. So I want to do two things. We've got about 18 minutes left. So I'm going to pop up your website.
Great.
And I'm also going to put the how to get there. So It is MuseFlow, MuseFlow.ai. Okay, so it's not .com.net, it's .ai, MuseFlow.ai. So when somebody goes to your website, the first thing they see, or at least the first thing I saw, was to start your 7-day free trial.
Yes.
So that's incredible that you're giving people opportunity to try it out before they do any kind of purchasing.
Have to. It's a whole new way of teaching. You got to really feel it to understand it.
Yeah, that I can see that. That makes sense. When just the tiny bit of demo that you did for me just to try out, make sure it was going to work. I was like, oh, okay. And so where would you then direct people to on your website? Like, how would they go about purchasing?
Well, what you would do is you would try the 7-day free trial. If you enjoyed, I will fully say just right off the bat, you do have to have a laptop and a MIDI compatible keyboard. MIDI is MIDI, music interface, digital information. It's any keyboard has it, but you just can't use it right now on your like acoustic piano, which is your classic upright, you know, strings, hammers hitting strings kind of thing, you know,
gotcha.
Tickling the ivory sort of thing. So it just won't work on that. We've got an incredible audio recognition algorithm that we're working on right now. So that is something that's in the works. We just need to kind of tweak it a little bit and then put that into the app. And then your computer will be able to listen to your keyboard at that point. The other thing you need is you need Chrome or Edge browsers right now. Safari doesn't allow you to connect MIDI keyboards to Safari browser. It's a security issue according to them, which I don't understand how you can reprogram a laptop or a computer or a browser with a MIDI keyboard. I have no clue how you could do that. So you need to use Chrome or Edge. Those are the two limitations. Laptop, we are making our mobile app right now, so that tablet and mobile is going to be applied here very, very soon. Give us about 3 or 4 months and that'll be coming out. And of course, the audio recognition will be coming out soon. So start your free trial. Get right on into it. You know, try it out. And I can show you what that looks like if you're interested. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay, great.
All right. So I think we got this figured out. I can hear things.
let's just make sure that we are good to go. Right. So let me just double check actually that we can actually get into it here. Fantastic. Great. All right. Okay. So let me start you off from the beginning. This is our level roadmap. Okay. We start you off from level zero. This is the basics. Let's start you off here and I can show you exactly what the...
This is a piano.
See, this is a piano, right? This is where we start you off from. We can teach you how to play your instrument in this interactive tutorial right off the bat. This is how we're going to be using, this is all of our tutorials moving forward. We are implementing that as we speak. We've just decided to do the first one first, level zero, just to kind of give you a little taste of what those interactive tutorials are going to look like moving forward. Flow state is going to be the thing that kind of separates us from our competitors, and using sight reading as the engine of our curriculum. Those are the two things that are going to change the paradigm, in my opinion, and that's what separates us from every other music education app out there. And you can notice that in this interactive tutorial, how flow is very important. Low touch, real-time feedback, immediate application of your skill set. Okay? Let's take a listen.
Each key makes a different sound. The ones on the right make higher-pitched sounds, and the ones on the left make lower-pitched sounds. Try it out yourself. Play the key that is furthest to the left on your piano. Great. Now play the key that is furthest to the right on your piano.
As you can see, my keyboard is smaller than the traditional 88-key keyboard. I've only got about, 40-something keys on mine. It's a small little thing. You can learn the entire first unit of MuseFlow on a small 25-key keyboard. That's where we start. Unit two will then bring that out to, I think the total, 48 keys is going to be what you need after that. And then the 72 model or a 68 model. And then of course the full 88 keys after that. Let's keep going.
When playing music, it's important that we maintain a steady, predictable pace. We normally do this by counting at a constant speed like this. Each one of these counts is called a beat, and we usually count them in groups of four. The beats should be evenly spaced, so you can always predict when the next beat will play, just like the ticking of a clock. The speed at which you count is called the tempo of a song, which is the number of beats per minute that you hear. For example, if you're playing a song at 180 beats per minute, that's a very fast tempo. If you're playing a song at 60 beats per minute, that's a much slower tempo. Try it yourself. Listen to the tempo of each pulse and use any key to tap out the beats in sync with what you hear.
If you miss one, goes right back to the beginning. Good effort. Try again. You can skip it if you'd like, or you can just do it again.
Great. Now try this faster example.
For the sake of time, I'll move forward. So we've got playing beats in time, right? Non-duration exercise right here, okay? And then we've got duration exercise. We've got what music notes look like, and we've got how to hold them for the proper length of time, okay? Quarter notes are one beat, one, two, three, four. Half notes are two beats, one, two, three, four. Whole notes are four beats. Move forward. Let's combine the rhythms together. Let's do this exercise, shall we?
Look at the notes on screen and use any key to play them with the correct timing in sync with the metronome.
If you miss it, goes right back to the beginning again, and you can do it again. This flow state, that flow inducing where there's no hiccup in between each note, in between each repeat.
Try another example.
It's always keeping you right there, engaged, keeping you in that tempo, in that pocket of it, right? That's key.
Yeah.
So that's our intro lesson. Now, by the time you're done with that, you know what, I didn't get to it, but you know how music is written. You can see the staff and everything like that and what music actually is. If you look down here, you can actually see our first lesson. This is the left-hand notes. We've got whole notes. We've got quarter notes. We've got half notes. Okay. It's not shown here in the preview, but in this level, you can actually see, you actually work your right hand as well. You work whole notes, half notes, and quarter notes as well in your right hand. Second level, let's add another note. Let's add D in the right hand, okay? Third level, let's add B in the left hand. Keep on going up. We're adding new notes. We're adding new time signatures. This is our 3-4 right here. We're adding another note, adding another note. Now we get into harmony, okay? Two-part harmony. Pretty basic. We've got whole notes and half notes, but it's pretty difficult for a lot of people. We're always keeping you in that pocket of flow, keeping you moving forward, keeping you moving forward. Now we're in 3-4 and we're doing two-part harmony. Adding another note, building harmony in 4-4, building harmony in 3-4, building harmony in 2-4. This is another time signature where two beats per measure, 1-2, 1-2. Now we add in rests. These are rests. This is a silence. Music is composed of pitches, duration of that pitch, and silence. That's always a very key point here. So let me try that. Let me show you this level, okay? I'll show you this level, and then I'll show you another one where I'm going to be totally flubbing all over the place, okay? just so you can see where we get to, okay? This is what our old tutorials look like. It's just slides with words on it, right? And then, of course, you get to an actual practice session right here, right? So let's skip the tutorial, and we'll move forward into let's do a complicated version of this, okay? Here we go.
Okay. I'm glad you're doing this and not me.
Uh-oh, messed that one up, see? You can see the...
Yeah.
The accuracy up in the left-hand corner, right-hand corner. Those are the chevrons, is what we call. That marks how many phrases you've gotten correct in a row. There we go. Now I'm on the next one. I'm on the last one. And there we go. Successfully passed the level. We've got a little level complete sign here. This metric is all messed up. Of course, I played notes in my left hand. That's a note that we've got for our engineers right now. You can see notes played, 122 notes played, 113 green, 6 yellow, and 3 red. Now we can keep playing and immediately move into the next level. This is level 16. So that's how it works. Now let's go on into a harder level. Let me show you something here. I'm going to get ready to mess up. You can see we got 14 notes in the entire... All of this is a C major, but we're going to have to work on using a lot of different dexterity movements here. We've got the pivot, we've got the stretch, and the hop that I'm going to have to utilize because we've got all of these notes. The C major scale. Let's try it. See if I can do it.
See that. So I'm glad you wouldn't have seen that was up there.
And there we are. Completion. Congrats. You've completed unit one. Back to level one. So you're not seeing it now because every level that I've already completed, I've already completed it. So the first time that you complete a level, at the end of that, when you see all your data at the on the end of that screen, the next slide is suggestions for repertoire. Every level has about four pieces, starting at level three, got 4 to 5 pieces associated with each level. Okay. Now we've got a couple different states. We've got the completion state, 100% accurate. We've got the what percentage of the piece do you have complete? This is a calculation of what tempo you are at. So we've got the goal tempo is always going to be the first thing that you're going to see here. Anything below it is going to be below tempo, which means that you can't pass it 100% complete. It's the same thing with the sight reading trainer. If you're below goal tempo, you're never going to be able to pass that level. You need to be at a specific pace and playing those skills at that specific pace to be able to pass that level. That's our metric. We're the ones that kind of judge that. Have you can you accurately play that skill at that certain threshold? If you can, great, you've passed that level. Anything above that tempo is still considered at goal tempo, but anything below it is not. So you can, so the calculation for the completion metric is going to be a combination of accuracy and the tempo that you're at, okay? Let's try something a little harder here, because what you're going to see is that sight reading is sight reading. The music isn't going to repeat as much as an actual song would. So again, the idea is so that you learn the skill outside of the context of a song. You can't learn it by rote. It's never going to repeat, and it's always going to be flowing and giving you new material. Then you can apply the skills that you've learned to songs that are going to have a little bit more repetition and a little bit more pattern. Okay. I've never played this song before. Let's see how well I do. Repeat that pattern again, right? Mm-hmm. There we go. And see, we immediately, you can repeat it right then and there, and it goes right back into it. Again, very flow, very low touch. That's always the key here, right? Anyway, that's kind of the idea. Like, what if you learned 3-4 only with this one specific song? Okay, maybe you learned it twice. Maybe you had two different songs that exemplified 3-4. The problem with that is that you're learning 3-4 in the context of this one specific song, right? Or the two specific songs. You're not learning it outside of songs and then applying it to songs. The problem with that, the reason why we did that was because we didn't have an infinitely generated amount of music that we could give a user.
Right.
That's the reason why we've been doing it the way that we've been doing it for 2,000 years. That's how we've been teaching students how to read music and play their instruments, because we never had an opportunity to do it otherwise. Now with technology like this, we can actually do that. And so this is, in my opinion, a much better way to do that. It's, again, more flow-inducing, more personalized, and you're learning it more thoroughly. You're actually learning the kinesthetic skill of playing that note and then being able to replicate it in song. So that's MuseFlow.
That was awesome. I loved that a lot, and might have to, you know, teach myself how to play piano after all at my ripe old age of
If you want to, please do it. And I would love to give you guys a discount code if you're cool with that.
Oh, yeah. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to have a discount code, be sure to reach out to me in the chat and just type in discount code.
Well, let's just make it, shall we? I'll make it on my end.
Okay.
And it'll give you and your audience 50% off for life. Okay.
Oh, wow.
We're still growing here. We have only got 40 people that are using this. And so we want to hear your feedback. We constantly are getting feedback from our users and we're implementing those changes. And if you want to be at the ground floor of this humbly revolution, then I think we would love to have you. Let's call it No Limits 50, shall we? No okay. Limits 50. So N-O-L-I-M-I-T-S 50. And I'll put that, and let's use it as that. So capitalize it, if you don't mind, Shelley, yep. in the show notes and in the description for the episode. Always just helps kind of make it more noticeable.
Because we're recording it, it won't let me put any comments up on the screen. So I got to really quickly. Oh, here, this is how I can do it really fast. And then unfortunately, we're going to have to go.
No problem.
Okay, there we go.
Hey, right. I love it. Nice. So that'll be the discount code. Plug it on in. That'll get you 50% off for life. It's not a lifetime subscription. It's just 50% off. We'll, of course, still change our subscription model as we move forward. But right now and forever, it'll get you 50% off whatever subscription you choose.
That is awesome. Thank you so much, Patrick. This has been absolutely amazing. And I would, as you said, I think you and I could talk for hours and days and never run out of things to talk about, but we have to stop sometimes. And it is our stopping point for this show today. So thank you very much. Be sure, guys, take advantage of that. I mean, that's an incredibly generous offer. 50% off for life. And hopefully, you know, we're talking decades of life of this program and all of its iterations. And I really can't see that happening.
And we're still growing. You know, we're adding more units. We're adding more curriculum. We're adding an exercise section where you can actually go dig deeper into little skills. And we're adding a theory section. Yeah. So we're adding more features and adding more sections as we grow along. The idea is to have an ecosystem of features for you to use with you or with you and your students, however you want to use it. So we're growing, you're growing, let's grow together.
Absolutely. So guys, remember, make sure you like and subscribe because we are coming up to that 200th episode and there's going to be prizes given away and there's going to be great things happening. So you don't want to miss that one for sure, but you really don't want to miss any of the episodes because they all have awesome guests like Patrick. Thanks everybody and have a great week.
Hey parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.